For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get no doubt.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on fire. This world is, what's an appropriate phrase, going to hell in a handbasket. We've got hot wars in Ukraine and in the Middle East. We've got China preparing for war in Taiwan. We've got people running for president of the United States, including one named Nikki Haley that wants to have war with everybody all the time. We've got Lindsey Graham, who talks about Russians dying with a smile on his face. And we have an invasion at the southern border, and the economy is in the tank, and yet we're supposed to be spending $100 billion defending Volodymyr Zelensky. So we are honored to have on the program today a gentleman who's a retired colonel, was a tank commander, is a PhD, was a senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense in the Trump administration, Colonel Douglas McGregor, who's going to give us some words of wisdom about what's going on in the world today.
Well, wisdom's a big word. I'm not sure we want to claim we're peddling wisdom, but we'll try certainly to hit the truth.
Yeah.
The truth is the most important part that seems to be missing from the mainstream media.
Well, and all joking aside, as I think you said on Tucker's program a few months ago, every word that's being reported on the Ukrainian war in the mainstream media is just a flat-out lie.
Unfortunately, it's not just Ukraine. It's everywhere.
Yeah,
I was interested in your comments about China. I've spent a lot of time in Northeast Asia. There are no preparations in China to invade Taiwan. None. And unless we put missiles and troops on Taiwan, there will be no invasion of Taiwan.
Yeah.
And the recent election, 60% of the electorate voted against any war for independence. They want nothing to do with it. So, you know, we just lie about everything. And, same thing in the Middle East right now. The last thing that anybody in that region wants is a war, except for Israel and the United States.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Going back a couple of generations or one generation now, I was reminiscing in my mind about George W. Bush putting an ultimatum out against the Taliban in Afghanistan, saying that if you guys don't cough up Osama bin Laden within a week, we're going to go to war. Well, guess what? We went to war. We destroyed their government. We were occupied Afghanistan for 20 years, and we couldn't find Osama bin Laden. Then finally we find him living with an ally over in Pakistan.
Well, here's the rest of the story. And by the way, Pakistan is not really an ally. Neither is Israel. Yeah. So there's a difference between a treaty ally and partners.
Yes.
Not that I have any objections to that. I'd like to get out of all these damn treaty organizations. But having said that, here's what most Americans don't know. We had plenty of CIA operatives with decades of experience in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And they told the administration, if you really want Osama bin Laden, you can send a couple of people over to see the Taliban and offer them, you know, this large box that's full of gold and say, we would really like to have Osama bin Laden and his lieutenants. And if you could accommodate this, this will be yours. They'd have done it.
Yeah.
They'd have sold it to us. And, you know, this notion that we should go in and occupy these places on the assumption that we're going to change these people, change their societies, change their culture, change their way of life is lunacy. And we've been wasting God knows how much money. We went to Vietnam for that purpose. It was a disaster. We've wasted all this time, money, and resources in Iraq and Afghanistan, and Libya, Syria, you name it. Mm-hmm. It's got to stop. It's a waste of time, money. And at the same time, we have a very serious existential threat to the country. That existential threat is on the southern border. That's number one. The second existential threat, which you have already encountered in your life, is the destruction of the rule of law inside the country.
Yeah.
Those are the things that we should be focused on. We should have 80,000 troops on the border until that thing is tied up tight as a drum. And then we have to begin the process of expelling these illegals. If you don't do it, your law is irrelevant. And frankly, that's the viewpoint that's widely held in this country by large numbers of people who see no evidence that they're going to be punished for anything they do.
Yeah,
it's wrong.
Unless you have adverse political opinions, if you support Donald Trump or you support the Constitution, then you can get arrested just for your thought processes. That's where the world is today.
Yeah, absolutely. I followed your experience with great interest, and it was appalling, incomprehensible. But, you know, look what the hell that you've been through. And that hell awaits all of us.
Yeah.
Unless we get control of our government, put an end to it. They call it the Department of Justice. It's a joke.
Well, there is no justice anymore. And we talk about that in this program all the time, that these days you've got a corrupt district attorney, which will charge you. You've got a corrupt judge, which will support it. You've got a jury of people that hate you because they've been preconceived ideas that you are the devil. You cannot possibly get a fair trial. You've got a court of appeals, for example, in the D.C. Circuit, which will uphold anything that they find against Trump. And then you got to hope that the Supreme Court some years down the road will reverse it. But when these kangaroo courts and these tainted juries convict you, you have to go to jail just like you really did a crime like Peter Navarro now.
Well, look, that's happened to all of the people on January 6th.
Yeah.
And when you look carefully at that whole thing, it's a travesty.
I had
to testify, and I testified honestly and politely, and they said, well, what did you think about January 6th? Was that an insurrection? I said, of course not. I said, insurrections are easy to identify. You have several thousand young men with guns who show up and begin shooting the government.
Mm-hmm.
They don't waste time. They don't bring their wives and children with them. They're not elderly people. These are people who are young and armed, organized, and out to shoot the government. There was nobody really there like that at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only person that's killed or was killed is Ashley Babbitt. And that is, you know, I began listening to people say, what a wonderful thing that they killed her. Unbelievable,
yeah.
Bizarre, but this is deeply ingrained. I'm sure you must have seen the reactions on CNN and the very MSNBC, all these things to Trump's win in Iowa.
Oh, yeah,
It's incredible.
My favorite one, of course, is Rachel Maddow. Right, I got it right here. We will keep an eye on that as it happens, meaning Trump's acceptance speech. We will let you know if there's any news made in that speech, anything noteworthy, anything substantive and important. The reason I'm saying this is there's a reason why we and other news organizations have stopped giving an unfiltered live platform to former President Trump. In other words, the official position of the official media is censorship. We will tell you what to hear, and we will tell you what to think. Do you ever think you'd live long enough in the United States to hear that?
Well, she's a spokesperson for the Ministry of Truth,
yep,
which is currently in the hands of the people that you see governing us in Washington, D.C. Merrick Garland, Tony Blinken, just go down the list. Large numbers of these people, Director Wray, and they are deciding for our benefit what we should or should not hear and what we may or may not do.
Yeah.
Aren't we fortunate? I mean, we've rarely been governed by people with such a monopoly on understanding and truth and so forth. So, you know, this just, if this doesn't infuriate Americans, I'm not talking about all these people that recently arrived here and could care less about us. I'm talking about Americans. There's something wrong with us. We won't survive because that's not us.
Yeah. Well, let me, Ken, in the time we've got, I'd like to get your opinion on a couple of things. Since recent history or recent events in the news says that, constantly the Ukrainians are gallantly defending their country against the Russians and are about to take over Russia with all their great advances, and that the brave Ukrainian soldiers are defying the massive Russian forces. What's the real story? And the first thing I'd like to ask is just what's been the human toll? What are the casualty rates in Ukraine and the effect it's had on the domestic population of Ukraine?
Well, the former prosecutor general of Ukraine appeared on television on 7 January, and he made a passionate speech to the public. He said, the people need to know what our losses are. We have lost 500,000 dead in this war. Gee, what a shocker.
Yeah.
I've been saying that for a few months. I was at 400,000, and I was at 450,000, and I finally said, look, we're approaching 500,000. Well, he just told you. It's the truth.
Yeah.
The second thing is that he says, well, we're losing 30,000 men a month that are either killed or so severely wounded, they're never going to come back. Well, all you have to do is look at the people the Russians are capturing. They're capturing old men.
Yeah.
And good Lord, 70-year-old men out there trying to, you know, be infantrymen. That's absurd. Or boys, yeah, children, pregnant women.
The last statistic I saw said that the average age of soldiers in the Ukrainian army is 43.
It's... it's unforgivable. It's and I feel badly for the Ukrainians because they've been lied to, they've been exploited and brutalized. And they have a secret police, much like the NKVD under Stalin, that goes out and rounds up anybody that disagrees with them and either jails them or shoots them. And then, of course, they bring in people involuntarily to fight if they can get them. This is over. This should have been over a long time ago. And it's because of people in Washington that think that they can somehow or another harm Russia by sacrificing the lives of Ukrainians that this continues.
Yeah.
And, you know, in case anybody hasn't noticed, Russia's in brilliant shape. Their economy is superb. They've lost on average about one Russian for every seven Ukrainians.
Yeah.
So it's just it's deplorable. But nobody's being told the truth here or in Western Europe. None.
And you've got Lindsey Graham hawking the war constantly. And on this one interview with Zelensky, he's there smiling and smirking about, and we've got Russians dying. I mean, the concept that Russia is our great adversary and that we have to crush Russia, I think may have to do with 19th century pogroms in Russia more than it has to do with modern economics or modern warfare in Central Europe.
Well, when one looks at the most strident advocates for war with Russia, one has to come to that conclusion. Again, we have no interest in this. There was no reason for conflict between us and the Russians. And making Ukraine neutral was a brilliant idea. I mean, if you're really thinking strategically and you have any fear of the Russians at all, isn't it nice to have perhaps 800 miles between you and the Russian army? This is just ridiculous nonsense. And the same thing is true in China. The stock market over there is tanking in a big way. They have a huge real estate bubble that's bursting. They have millions of people that can't find work anymore in the big cities. They're going back to the country. And you have a huge anti-corruption campaign. They've been rounding up and jailing and in some cases executing people for all sorts of things, everything from building faulty hulls for the Chinese Navy. And by the way, the Chinese don't like navies. They don't want to go to sea. Gosh, you know, the people who are natural mariners are the Japanese. The Japanese Navy is brilliant. It's lethal. All of their forces are top rate, not the Chinese.
Yeah.
The Chinese have always been about one thing, business and self-enrichment. So, you know, we need to wake up and smell the proverbial coffee, but the media doesn't want to let us do that. Nobody in Washington wants to let us do that. And when you scratch the surface in Washington, there all these representatives, most of these senators are a mile wide and an inch deep.
Yeah.
They turn around and say, what should we do? Well, Senator, given the projections for contributions, if you take this position, I think you'll be sitting pretty flush with cash. Okay, well, then let's do it. You know, that's what you're dealing with.
And just the amount of money that can be made and squandered in war is just so shocking. If you or I go down the local 7-Eleven and lift a six-pack of beer, not in the city of St. Louis, but in cities that enforce laws, you go to jail. But if you're a senator and you send billions of dollars to some dictator in Ukraine and it just disappears without accounting, nobody gets arrested. Nobody goes to jail. There's no repercussion. But you get to say you're saving the world for democracy.
Well, right now, Walgreens are shutting down across the country, and the NAACP is furious, saying they have no right to shut their doors. And, you know, Walgreens has said, look, how many times do we stand by and watch our stores destroyed? How many times do we stand by and watch the population come in and steal everything they want?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you have any merchants left in Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. You know, we've got to get back to the rule of law. And if I were a policeman, I'm not sure I'd take any action, because today the policeman that intervenes and tries to stop it, he's probably going to go to jail for the reasons you outlined earlier between the attorneys and the judges.
Yeah. It, you know, the city of St. Louis, which is the crime capital of the world right now, the convenience stores and the CVSs did away with shopping carts because people could steal too much and get out the door. Now CVS in St. Louis doesn't even have the hand baskets because people can carry too much and steal it in the hand baskets. You can only now steal what you can carry in your own hands at CVS in St. Louis. And there's no law enforcement, even after we successfully got rid of the Soros corrupt prosecutor. The new prosecutor says he's, prosecuting 25% more crime than the past. That's like saying I've spit twice in the ocean and we're going to save that problem.
Well, it's an acute lack of male genitalia.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, you got a good laugh out of my producer. Hey, we've got to take a hard break here. Can you come back with us in just a moment?
Sure, sure.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're in a conversation here with Colonel Douglas McGregor, who is the little bluebird of happiness, talking about how perfect the world situation is. The thing that I find the most shocking every day, and, you know, I had the misfortune of running for Senate and getting to see the dirty underside of politics. One of the things that shocks me the most is how much everybody in politics and how much everybody in the media lies about everything and seem to get away with it with impunity.
Yeah. By the way, I've been called a lot of things, but the bluebird of happiness isn't one of them. That's a new one. Well, you know, look, lying is part of the deal right now in our society. If the truth is ugly, then a lie is beautiful. And so every day we're treated to lies. And that's constant in Washington, D.C., because nobody really wants to stand up and tell the truth. We all know what the truth is. You know, I grew up in North Philadelphia. I saw that city run into the ground and deteriorate over many years. It's tragic. No one wants to say we've got to go in and get control. And in order to get control and restore order requires the use of force. Oh, well, we can't do that. You're a fascist if you suggest that. Well, I may be many things, but I do believe in law and order, and I believe the police have an important role in our society. Right now, we're seeing people recruited into the Army and the Marines. Many of them are just not the people you want.
Yeah.
And this is not new. We can't attract really talented young men into the Army. I mean, if you're the average young blue-blooded American who played football in high school or was remotely athletic and intelligent, you know, why would he come in? Because he's being told that Susie Q over here, who weighs all of 90 pounds, that she can do anything you can do.
Yeah.
Well, if that's true, then you don't need me. I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. That was the top line of my notes for today, which I hadn't looked at. And that was, I was going to ask you about the current war readiness status of the United States Army and military, since our senators and our government is constantly kicking the hornet's nest, wanting to create a regional war in the Middle East, wanting to create a general war in Central Europe. It occurs to me that when I was draftable age during the Vietnam War, we had about 4 million men in uniform. The Army's, what, about 450,000 people now?
Probably, yeah.
And
well, we're not in any shape to fight anybody that can actually fight back. What people don't understand is after 91, with the brief exception of the Serbs, whom we really never fought on the ground, we just bombed them, our opponents had no real organized military forces. In other words, you were bombing hapless people that didn't have much to fight back with. Yeah. And they were using AK-47s or command detonated mines. I think 83% of all the serious injuries and deaths in Iraq or Afghanistan, for instance, were all a result of mines. A mine that's detonated under you as you drive over it or something.
Yeah.
It's you know, we haven't fought a really capable enemy. Well, you know, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee because things are changing. And if we have to fight in the Middle East, we have to reckon with a very high probability of not just Iran, but also Turkey and other Arab states. And the Turks are ferocious fighters. They're some of the best soldiers you're going to find anywhere. And the other thing is everybody assumes, well, these are just, you know, not terribly smart, uneducated people. That's not true anymore. They have gotten a good education. They are technically savvy. They can attack you through cyberspace. They can attack you with precision guided missiles. I mean, the last thing we just saw with Iran, they hit us with not us, but they hit targets in Syria and Iraq that were Mossad, Israeli agents operating on the ground in Iraq. And then their compatriots, Kurds, and even ISIS operatives. They were working against the Shiite Arabs and the Iranians. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, you know, they did a brilliant job and shocked the living daylights out of everybody. You mean they could really do that? Remember, they had to send all these missiles through air defenses. Mm-hmm. Those didn't work very well. Our air defenses in Ukraine have not worked very well. No, we're, and if you look at some of these other forces, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
We need to stop being so arrogant and ignorant.
Well, there's, it occurs to me from just my vague memory, there's about 90 million people in Turkey. Their standing army is about a million people. Iran's got about 90 million people. Their standing army is about a million people. And these aren't Stone Age tribes.
You're talking about the whole armed forces.
Yeah, whole armed forces, yeah. But I mean, but it's, these aren't Stone Age. Like
millions.
But I mean, these aren't Stone Age tribesmen like we're told in the media.
Well, yeah, remember that everybody in Washington lives on Fantasy Island. As far as they're concerned, it's 1991. We can sanction or bomb anyone on the planet into submission. Sanctions haven't worked very well at all anywhere. They haven't changed anything. They made us unpopular as hell, and everybody's trying to avoid our financial system. Putin is about to lead the BRICS, you know, Brazil, India, China, all these major powers. When you start adding up the numbers, just with the existing BRICS, Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Brazil, China, India, you're talking about, what, more than half of the world's population,
yeah.
And they're leading them to gold-backed currency.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're going to get out from under us. That's what it's all about.
Yeah,
we've done it to ourselves.
You imagine what's going to happen if we lose status as a world's reserve currency. We just become one more third world debtor nation subject to the control by those people that actually have cash.
Well, given the massive influx of millions and millions and millions of illegals from who knows where, how many of us will be Americans? How many of us will be left? Yeah. I mean, I've already got plenty of people that I've met just in the Washington area, and they will come up to me and ask me interesting questions. What's Thanksgiving? What's Halloween? You know, what is this? And then many of them are very honest. I don't care about any of that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about your Civil War. I don't care about the Revolution. I don't. What are these things? They're nothing to me. Well, you know, this is not a minor development. And this, of course, is what many people in the globalist camp in Washington are celebrating. They're celebrating our denationalization, our conversion to a place for all nations where if you're anything, you can be an American. Well, if an American is anything, pretty soon an American is nothing.
Absolutely.
And this is exactly what happened in the Roman Empire when Roman citizenship, which was highly prized and hard to get, suddenly was given to everyone. And not long thereafter, the Romans were out of business.
Yeah, no more Rome. Absolutely. And that's and I've been down to the border, and you just the thing that is the most shocking to me down there, where everything is shocking, but I watched, I filmed, Customs and Border Patrol going down to the Rio Grande, actually signaling. You can see the signal light going over to the cartels on the other side. They get the signal. They start packing them on the rubber boats and bringing them over to the American side of the river. They've got the buses already lined up at the top of the hill to take these people. They line them up in columns and rows. My wife and I spoke to a girl from Guatemala, 9 years old, and asked her where she was going in the United States. And she had just gotten off a rubber raft from Mexico 5 minutes before, and she said New Haven, Connecticut. You know, I don't think she was going to Yale, but somehow our government had already coordinated with these illegal cartels to give her a job assignment or a home assignment in the United States.
Yeah, they have camps set up down in Darien in Panama. They built huge areas. One is called the China Camp, just to bring in Chinese. And Mayorkas is well aware. He's seen all of this. He's delighted. That's what he was appointed to do. And he's succeeding. It's his job to erase us. And we're standing around being erased.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put it any more forcefully and accurately. Because that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, it's a design to destroy our Western civilization, our Western culture, our religion, and just you know, it gives me an opportunity, I guess, to mention that you're now the CEO of our country, our choice.
Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about that organization?
Sure. I was asked to be the CEO. Others founded it, and the people that founded it invested what money they could. They're not billionaires. And, you know, today, if you're not a billionaire, nobody in Washington pays much attention to you. But these people are millionaires, and they've given as much as they can. And essentially what they said was, we're tired, and I think our members are tired of voting for Republicans or Democrats and getting the same policy outcome. They figured out that the majority of Democrats and Republicans are owned by the same donors and are responding to those donors. They understand that it's not voters who get you elected, it's donors.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a government in the White House and in the executive administration that's completely disinterested in us. They have another agenda, and they're happy to see us vanish. We're the problem. I don't know how many times, well, you're another old white man. You got to go away. Yeah. As soon as you're gone, everything would be better. And I got into quite an argument with someone that said, well, we need people of color, you know, in key positions in the armed forces. By the way, we have too many white pilots in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. I said, well, we didn't have too many at Midway. We didn't have too many at Guadalcanal. You know, we didn't have too many in Korea. Suddenly we have too many that we don't need.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very interesting perspective. It's as though, you know, please just go away and die.
Yeah.
Leave us all alone and everything will be better.
One thing we have too many of is 4-star generals.
Oh, well, you got 44 of those right now, 4-star admirals and generals. Yeah. And during World War II, until the end, when we had lots of promotions, but they were honorifics. You know, they were sort of, thank you, you did a great job, here's your 4-star or something, or 5 stars. But up until January of 1945, we had 7 4-stars. We had 4 in the Army, and we had 3 in the Navy. And the names, Nimitz, King, and the name escapes me right now. I'll think of it. And then you had 4 Army generals, and you had Eisenhower. The senior one was MacArthur, then Marshall, then Arnold, then Eisenhower. And we managed to do reasonably well. We weren't perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. We had some problems, but 7 4-stars got us through the Second World War. Now we need 44.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, that's wonderful if you're in the defense business, because you have 44 clients, because each 4-star wants to make himself into an important person. How do you do that? How do you build a bureaucratic empire? How do you enrich yourself? And then when you retire, you know, provided you sign up for the right things and the right policies, you can have a job on Wall Street if you've supported the destruction of your country, or you can make lots of money in the defense industry by supporting the production and purchase of bad equipment, yeah. Bad ideas. So
go become on the board of General Dynamics or Raytheon or Boeing and make yourself lots and lots of money.
Yeah, people say, what would you do? I said, well, first of all of these general officers, with very few exceptions, and there are always exceptions, they're poison. They're not going to do anything for us, for the nation. They're not going to make any decisions that make any sense. They've already assimilated into this new ideological Borg, as I call it, on Fantasy Island. So I said, you got to go down to majors and lieutenant colonels. You may have to go down to captains and promote them and make some of these people general officers. I mean, that's what we had to do before World War II. Marshall was a colonel until a couple of years before the Second World War broke out. Then he became a 1-star.
Yeah.
And he was promoted from 1-star to 4. And part of that was to give the place an enema. And right now, that's what Fantasy Island needs, is a big enema.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, it's when you talk about the destruction of our culture and destruction of our democratic republic, the thing that strikes me the most is that each and every one of these people takes an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And here we have a president of the United States who's just flouting the Constitution. You've got the Attorney General of the United States, who's using his office for political persecution. You've got the Director of Homeland Security, who is doing everything he can to make our homeland as insecure as possible. And Congress is going to hold hearings, and there's going to be committee meetings, and there's going to be subpoenas. But you know as well as I do that not a single person is going to go to jail, and not a single person is going to have any serious consequences. While the rest of us have our lives destroyed and our way of life destroyed, the people on the top that are actively working to destroy us are going to retire to million-dollar pensions, million-dollar speaking contracts, and lobbying positions where they then will sell their influence back to the same organizations they just left. You wonder how long we can survive under this circumstance.
No, that's a good question, and I don't have an easy answer, and I'm not saying there's an easy way out, regardless of whomever is elected president in the fall. Assuming we get that far before the financial system implodes and the economy tanks.
Yeah.
Because once that happens and the food stamps stop and many of the other bennies from the old federal government go away, all hell is going to break loose in lots and lots of cities, as we all know.
Yeah.
So I don't have an easy answer, and I don't dwell too much on this election. What I tell people is you got to make a decision where you're going to stand when the crisis erupts. Who are you? Look in the mirror and decide what you are. Are you something else and then an American? Or are you just something else? Or are you an American? Think through carefully what that means. And if you are, you need to stand with us. And that's the way it is at Our Country, Our Choice. We're just Americans. We're nothing special. You know, there's no special category amongst us. Every conceivable form of American is in our organization one way or another. And we all believe in the same things. We want an end to these overseas adventures. We want to close the border. We want a return to the rule of law. We want an end to the criminality, an end to this illegal immigration. And we want to expel them. We want law enforced. We want to stop the sexualization of our children. You know, this nonsense that's being, you know, promulgated in the schools. All of that has to go away.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy, but those are the key factors right now for us. And, you know, what can we do about election integrity? You have different laws in every state. It's very, very hard to deal with. So I am always very skeptical of the quality of the election and how you can get anybody in there under the circumstances, given all of the problems with this ridiculous absentee voting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, I start every presentation today, whether I'm talking to 20 people or 2,000, with the same question. I say, how many people here believe that there's a political solution to our current crisis? In the last 29 times I've given that speech, one hand went up, and I was doing this in D.C. about a month ago, and that guy didn't understand the question. And that's a very bad situation for us, I think.
Well, when people don't have enough to eat, when supply chains break down, things change, and that's where you have to take a stand. I think we're headed that way.
Yeah.
I hope it's not too severe, but, you know, we're on the threshold of major difficulties. Anybody who thinks that you can move beyond the $34 trillion debt and keep doing what we've done, watch the bond market, see what happens there, watch the price of gold, watch all of these things happen. You know, the world is going to change, and we have a lot of people out there that don't like us anymore. We've taken a lot of bad positions for a long time. We're not seen by the world as the guys who wear the white hat.
Yeah, we're always kicking the nest, doing everything we can to instigate violence around the world, because then it gives us an excuse to come in and make everything right, reform the world in the image of American Republic and our constitutional republic, and we're going to solve all the world's problems by killing millions of people and spending trillions of dollars and making enemies out of the entire world.
Well, I always liked John Wayne. I never cared for Pee Wee Herman. But I'm afraid Pee Wee Herman has taken over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when you've got a president of the United States, well, I'll say this. Lloyd Austin goes missing for a week. He's in intensive care. He's unconscious for some period of time when they've got him under general anesthesia. The president of the United States is unconscious all the time. And what does this teach us? This is a deep state telling us we really run things. You don't need a secretary of defense. You don't need an elected president, because even when they're both out of commission, the world works just fine, because a deep state will take care of that. And I think that's a message we needed to learn this week.
You are spot on. And I've heard very few people reach that conclusion, and that's the right one.
It's very frightening. And, you know, when people ask me, you know, you've been around here for a while, and you know all the folks in the government, who's running the country? And I always say the same thing. If you knew their name, they're not in control.
That's right. No, it's true. It's sad. Well, listen, God bless you and your family, and God bless everybody in St. Louis, and I hope that we'll see better times in the future. But I think things are going to be tough, and we'll have to make some hard decisions. I have faith in the Americans. I think they'll stand up and be counted.
I sure hope so, Colonel, and I sure appreciate your insights today, and God bless you, and good luck with Our Country, Our Choice.
By the way, if you are interested, you just go to OurCountryOurChoice.com. It's just as one word, OurCountryOurChoice.com. Look at the website. You want to join us, we're happy to have you. And there are plenty of videos on there that I think you would be interested in, tell you how to do it. But I think we're at the beginning of a new movement, and we want a third way. We're sick of Republicans and Democrats.
Absolutely. And I've had that website scrolling under your photograph the whole time during the show. So.
Okay. All right. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you, Colonel. And talk to you later.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that's Colonel Douglas McGregor, former chief advisor to the Secretary of Defense, commander of the largest tank battle since World War II during the Gulf War, a true American, a true patriot, and somebody we're very proud and honored to have on the show. Well, we'll be right back with my review of politics this week and what we're going to expect in the future.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on fire. There's a burning in your heart. On Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Mark McCloskey on Fire. Well, you know, the little bluebird of happiness that I am, little bluebird of happiness that Colonel McGregor is, I mean, you just, you can't appreciate how frightening the future is if you understand it. The old comment was that if you like sausage and government, you shouldn't see how either one is made. But it's not even... That would be the minimum way of describing it now. Our whole governmental system is so corrupt. The media is so corrupt. The lies that permeate everything are so total that it's hard to know anything and not hard to form a reasonable opinion about anything other than if you go into the world looking at it from the perspective of every single word you hear is a lie and every single thing that the government tells you believe the exact opposite, and you'll have a pretty good chance of being right, then maybe you can navigate your way through the endless BS. But there's one little bright light, one little ray of sunshine this week, and that's Donald Trump's victory in the Iowa caucuses. The media always was building up, everybody, including my ex-friends maybe at Fox TV, Nikki Haley is the savior of the Republican Party. She's going to save us. Well, you might remember that they were all on board for Ron DeSantis about this time last year, and because they want to find anybody but Trump. All the people, even on the morning show on Fox when you get Brian Kilmeade and Ainsley, whatever her name is, and Steve Ducey, they're all talk up Trump. But in the real world, they're just lathering at the bit to have somebody other than Trump that they can promote. And boy, they're sure pushing Nikki Haley. But then the push comes to shove in Iowa. It's 30 degrees below zero with a wind chill. And only the diehards are going to come out and caucus. Well, what happens? Trump comes out with 51% of the vote, 51% in a field with a governor, an ex-governor, and a billionaire. And all together, they can't come up with as much between all of them as Trump's 51%. But who comes in second? Ron DeSantis. Who comes in third? Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley was a governor of South Carolina. Nikki Haley was a UN ambassador from the United States. She apparently cannot count to three, right? Because she comes in third, and immediately she gets on the stage and says, this proves that it's a two-man race, all right? Let's see. Would that be Donald Trump versus Joe Biden? Because it certainly isn't Donald Trump versus a person that comes in third. And by the way, 45% of the people that voted for Nikki Haley were Democrats, okay? 45% of the people that say their vote for Nikki Haley in New Hampshire primary say that they would vote for Joe Biden instead of Donald Trump if he becomes a nominee, all right? What does that tell you about Nikki Haley? That tells you that she's got this great big horn sticking out of the middle of her forehead. We call those rhinos. We call those Republican in name only. And if the only way I'll digress. She said something else, which I found just offensive. She, when talking about the future of her campaign after coming in third in Iowa, she says, we're going to go to New Hampshire. Then we're going to go to South Carolina, and we're going to keep campaigning because this is what I love. Okay? You notice she didn't say, I love the United States. I'd love to support the Constitution. She says what she loves is campaigning. What she loves is being a politician. What she loves is being out there and beating the bushes and having people say, yo, you go, girl, because that's what, you know, it's ego for her. Who do you want to elect to high office? What you want to elect to high office are the people that don't want the job. The people that don't need the job, the people that do that job as a burden that they take on for the purposes of helping their country, helping their fellow man, supporting the Constitution, preserving our freedoms, preserving our culture, instead of saying, I want to get elected because it makes me feel good, or I want to campaign because I like the kudos, or I want to campaign because I want power and money. And by the way, in the case of Nikki Haley, who I'm dumping on pretty heavily today, when she gets done in politics, what's she going to do? Is she going to go back on the board of Boeing or Raytheon or General Dynamics and make millions of dollars? You bet your fanny that she will. And that's what she's in this for. And so, I'll do one more dump on Nikki Haley. She was asked about something that I guess it was that one of the people on The View said about her, that the only reason she didn't get elected was because she was a brown girl, right? And Nikki Haley says, well, you know, there's no racism in this country. There's never been racism in this country. But when I was a girl, I was treated badly because I was a brown girl. All right. Never racism. No racism now. But treat me differently because I can pretend to be in a minority group. And I'm going to tell you that in the absence of racism, I was a victim of racism. You got to keep your story straight. If you really want your people, that you really want the MAGA Republicans to support you, they're going to have to believe you, and they can't believe you if you just keep changing your story to meet the narrative of the interviewer that happens to be interviewing you at that minute. That just makes you a liar, makes you a great candidate for president, makes you a great candidate for going to D.C., because as long as you can forget reality, as long as you can lie at will to fit the narrative, you'll fit in great there. The only people that won't fit in great there are the people that refuse to lie, the people that refuse to go along with the narrative, the people that will recognize reality, the people that will actually stand up there and risk their lives, their fortune, and their future to protect our republic and to protect our Constitution. And one guy that comes to mind might be Donald Trump, right? How many people have said, including Adam Schiff, for example, and the president, so-called, Joe Biden, who say that we have to do everything we can to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't become president again? Does that include assassination? I mean, Tucker Carlson asked Donald Trump that directly. I mean, they've tried to impeach you twice, indict you, sue you, try to keep you off the ballot. What more can they do? Because everything they've tried to do so far has just made you stronger. And so Tucker says, aren't you a little concerned that the last resort is assassination? And the president just kind of sidestepped it. Well, Vivek said the same thing the other day about Trump, that everything they've tried to do to destroy him just makes him stronger, and there's no way that they're going to allow him to become president. I mean, Alex Jones had the same take on it. I have the same take on it. I cannot imagine that they would be willing to, you know, to allow Donald Trump to become president of the United States. And here's one mechanism, right? Early on in the evening of the Iowa caucus, MSNBC is discussing the primary results, and then Rachel Maddow interrupts the program to inform the world that Donald Trump is about to give his victory speech, and they're not going to cover it.
At this point in the evening, the projected winner of the Iowa caucuses has just started giving his victory speech. We will keep an eye on that as it happens. We will let you know if there's any news made in that speech, if there's anything noteworthy, something substantive and important. The reason I'm saying this is, of course, there is a reason that we and other news organizations have generally stopped giving an unfiltered live platform to remarks by former President Trump. It is not out of spite. It is not a decision that we relish. It is a decision that we regularly revisit. And honestly, earnestly, it is not an easy decision. But there is a cost to us as a news organization of knowingly broadcasting untrue things.
Well, it seems to me I've heard that exact same language before.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
And so here you have this, can I say this is Rachel Maddow saying in public what they've been saying in private for as long as they've existed. And I'm talking about the evil deep state. And that is that we will tell you what to think, meaning the power elite. We will tell you what to think. She says, we will keep an eye on that, meaning the president's acceptance speech, as it happens. We, the deep state, will let you know if there's any news made in that speech. We, the deep state, anything noteworthy. We, the deep state, anything substantive and important as decided by the deep state. And the reason I'm saying this is there's a reason we and other news organizations have stopped giving an unfiltered live platform to former President Trump. Unfiltered means without censorship. Here you've got the mainstream state media telling you that we, meaning all the organized media in the country, and I'll put the Murdoch family in that organization too, have decided that we're not going to give President Trump access to you. We're going to filter, meaning censor, which you're allowed to hear about President Trump from President Trump or regarding President Trump because we, the deep state, know better, right? We, the deep state, will tell you what to think. We'll tell you what's important. We'll tell you what's newsworthy and then tell you how to interpret it and then tell you how to vote. Because according to the left, who always talks about democracy, even though this is a constitutional republic and not a democracy, but everybody on the left always talking about democracy, and their definition of democracy is we will select the candidate for you. We will eliminate all other choices. And then once we have selected the candidate for you and eliminated all other choices, you will have the absolute freedom to vote for the one candidate we allow you to. And that's exactly the same as the Soviet Union. Leonid Brezhnev would get elected with 99% of the vote, right? And the other 1% would go out and be gone the next day. And that's exactly what's our future in this country if we don't win this election cycle. You know, you just have to stand up and say no. You just have to stand up and say, you know, there is truth out there, and it has nothing to do with what you're told on mainstream media. But one of the things that mainstream media has been trying to sell us, oh, now for a long time, is electric cars. And the government is now going to mandate electric cars. And guess what? We had a deep freeze here recently. And guess what happened to all those Teslas? They stopped running. Their batteries degrade with temperature. The charging stations degrade with temperature. And they had these great pictures of all these dead Teslas lined up at the charging station where people were without power. They had to turn off the heaters, obviously, in their cars because they run on electricity. And so these people are stuck in sub-zero temperatures in their dead Teslas in the middle of the night at charging stations that don't work, having to get their Teslas towed home to use their own chargers. I mean, if that doesn't frighten the you-know-what out of you, you have no mind at all, because what's the push for electric cars really about? Control. Not allowing you the ability to transport yourself around where you wanted to at your own will. You've got to be within range of a charging station, and guess what the government can do? The government can cut off electricity. The government can stage a faux crisis where, oh my God, the electric grid went down. Gee, you guys are all stuck with 2,500 pounds of dead weight in your front yard, and you can't go anywhere except on foot. That's the 15-minute rule. What's the next one? Well, you might remember that back in 2021, the government passed this 2,100-page Recovery Act, COVID Recovery Act. Hidden in those 2,100 pages was a requirement by 2026 that all cars have a kill switch in them, so your car will monitor your driving behavior, and if your car determines that you're not acting in a safe way, it will turn your car off and not let you drive. Right now, if you get caught drunk driving, before they can take away your driving privileges, you get to go to court, ask a jury about it, and get convicted, and only then, unless you plead guilty, of course, and only then can they take your driving privileges away or declare you guilty of drunk driving. This law that's already been signed by the president makes your car your judge, jury, and executioner. If the car doesn't like the way you're driving it, it turns off. You now are a slave to your car. Your car is a slave to the federal government. And just keep repeating that word, slave, because that's what's in store for us if we don't stop it right stinking now.
You're looking good just like a snake in the grass. Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. Don't bring me down. No. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.